there is this web that's connected to all other beings of similarities. That's the spirit animal or animal spirit guide. And that is the one that was spotted by you and felt unusual, looked unusual, and you kept seeing it or hearing about it or seeing it on a billboard or dreaming about it, however it may show up, that animal. It's not just the animal, it's the spirit animal.
Hello, I'm Julie Kroll. You're listening to the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. Each week we gather right here to make connections that break through the illusion of separation. Welcome. Your journey of conscious evolution continues right here, right now. Spirit animals appear in our lives in a variety of ways, from real life encounters to dreams and mystical experiences. 8 days ago, I had a profound experience with a couple of turtle doves. They literally helped me let go of my failing 14-year-old Shih Tzu. That in itself was a profound spiritual animal experience that I'll share probably in another episode yet to come. But another story emerged when a bright red cardinal presented itself on my step outside a glass door that very same day. I thought the bird was communicating that my beloved pup would be okay and that she would never be forgotten. However, the cardinal has been back every day since and has become more of a messenger than I first thought. When reading the book Animals, Dr. Farmer encourages one to practice and enter into a partnership with spirit animals. I opened myself to an expanded sense of this bright red bird's message. Soon, the cardinal's meaning was echoing and interweaving with my husband's voice about a couple new opportunities and how I was receiving them. It all began to make sense. Our guests today will explain how these profound encounters affirm our intimacy with the animal world and the realm of spirit. Are you open to receive gifts of wisdom, guidance, protection, comfort, support, power, and even healing? We're going to learn how to experience the magic of spirit animals, and hopefully you will even marvel at the physics of consciousness and other realms and what these kinds of stories can teach us in everyday life. I invite you to take a few conscious breaths, bring your awareness to your heart, relax, open your mind, and settle into your essential wholeness as we introduce our guests. But first, my co-host, Dr. Paul Mills, is professor of public health and family medicine at the University of California, San Diego. He has over 400 scientific publications in the fields of pharmacology, oncology, cardiology, psychoneuroimmunology, behavioral medicine, and integrative health. He's the award-winning author of the book Science, Being, and Becoming, The Spiritual Lives of Scientists. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Julie. Thank you. And it's a pleasure to be back on the show together. And I'm really looking forward to this particular episode on animals and spirit guides. I'll begin by introducing one of our guests, a friend and colleague and someone I interviewed in my book, The Spiritual Lives of Scientists. Dr. Thomas Brophy is a physicist whose academic and scientific work includes NASA's Voyager and Cassini spacecraft projects, and an appointment as a National Science Foundation exchange scientist at the University of Tokyo. He's currently president of the California Institute for Human Science in Encinitas, California, and president of the Society for Consciousness Studies. He's the author of several books, including The Mechanism Demands a Mysticism and The Origin Map. Welcome, Thomas. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks so much, Paul. It's great to be on the show.
And yes, Thomas, I'm so excited to bring you into this conversation. But first, I'm going to introduce Dr. Stephen Farmer. He is the best-selling author of Animals, Personal Tales of Encounters with Spirit Animals, a book in the Common Sentience book series that we've been doing here. He's a licensed psychotherapist, shamanic healer, ordained minister, and former college professor. His extensive experience in the fields of psychotherapy and shamanic healing enables him to provide his clients with a comprehensive and highly individualized counseling experience. Dr. Farmer's unique approach as a psycho-spiritual healer is a result of his in-depth studies of spiritual transformation, trauma, recovery, shamanism, hypnotherapy, breathwork, and energy psychology. Stephen has written a copious amount of best-selling books and is a popular workshop facilitator. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you, Julie. I appreciate it. Thank you. It's great being here, especially with such esteemed colleagues. Thank you.
Yeah, as I'm listening to Thomas's bio and then your bio and then introducing Paul with his bio, I'm seeing all these threads as I'm a psychotherapist myself and in my former life. I don't want to say how long I've been in this career, but also an energy healer and practitioner as well as doing this talk show. So yeah, there's so many threads that weave all of us together. I'm really looking forward to it. And Dr. Farmer, I like to start this show. This is a part of the Dr. Julie Show, All Things Connected. And I know with physics, Dr. Brophy will probably give us an in-depth description of what this means, all things connected. But I'm curious from your perspective, Stephen, if you could answer that from your perspective as a shamanic healer, psychotherapist, and writing this book, Animals, what does all things connected mean to you?
What it means to me, I just have finished two retreats, you know, back-to-back weekends, and had the amazing experience of being, these were both in the desert, one at Joshua Tree here in California and another in Sedona. So there's something to me very mystical about the desert. And all things connected, what that means to me, the way I describe it would be, let's say I'm walking in the desert or I'm walking over to the local park or, getting outside, getting out of the box of our adobes and our houses. You know, thankfully we have them, we're able to have them as shelter. But to be able to walk out in the natural world and breathe and just have the awareness, I call what's going on for so many people, the awakening process. It's a process. You know, we can get really caught up in the mundane, but I believe that the natural world is the place to go. And again, it could be out in the backyard, sitting by a tree. It could be at the desert, it could be down at the ocean. But there are moments where the usual self is just sort of put aside and you have a felt awareness of that connection, that we are truly related to all beings on this planet. We're related to the land. We have, unfortunately, this is the good news, bad news. I think Western civilization in particular has forgotten that. You know, it's a deep-seated ancestral memory, I believe. And what the good news is, we're awakening. We're beginning to have teachers, that are encouraging, get outside, go outside, but don't just go outside, go look at the stars, feel the connection. And also in some Native American traditions, although it's translated, they are accorded that term that implies their relatives. Example, we're just past the full moon, grandmother moon, the elder beings that we get to experience are accorded that designation as grandmother, grandfather, or sister, brother. I look at my dog and I go, that's, he's my brother, in a certain way. The Native American will say something like this, that's the tree people, the animal people, the plant people, the star beings, etc., all with the implication that we're related. So it sets up a mental construct that you can then go out and experience it. It's so much to have the intellect to say, this is true. All things are connected. Julie, what I aim for is the experience. And I aim for is perhaps not the best way to describe it, but just be open to that experience. Just pause for a moment, look up at the stars, pause for a moment, look at the plant people, pause for a moment, sit by a tree, breathe with the tree. There's various exercises I introduce in my workshops that encourage and facilitate just that deeply felt awareness where the usual self is just put aside for a while.
I just want to pause there and thank you for bringing that in. Paul and I have been doing this series, and we talk about the spiritual wisdom and the science converging, but also bringing in the lived experience as that third piece and that third strand that's undeniable. And yet, Thomas, I know that you've had a lived experience of intuition and psychic phenomenon that was denied to you as a young boy from your dad reading Paul's book. And so I'm curious, before we dig into that, what if there's anything you might want to add from your perspective of what all things connected means to you?
Sure. I really appreciated the way Stephen described all things connected, especially with the natural world and the beings. In the natural world, being our, you know, brothers and sisters and our relatives. And actually, that question of how can this be real? How can we really be connected actually to all these other great beings in all the other realms, even the animal and the mineral realm? How can that actually be real? That's the question I was pondering when the event with the spirit animal happened that I described and Paul relates in his book.
Beautiful. Well, do you want to describe that now, Thomas? I was going to come to it a little later, but this sounds like a good time for it. And I could do a backdrop that Thomas just explained, that he was pondering this question for years. It's a fundamental physics question, as I recall, Thomas, about energy. And there was a rub in how you were seeing things, and you couldn't find the solution.
Yeah.
Yes, a crow landed in a courtyard at the University of Tokyo, and...
Yes, and the question was also related to what Julie noted, that as I was growing up as a kid, I had this kind of conflict of cognitive conflict with the culture I was growing up in, and that the culture said that experiences like this can't have reality. And the reason was, in sort of the standard view, was that, well, these kind of psychic experiences or connectivity experiences, intuitive experiences, they can't be real because they would violate fundamental laws of physics, like the conservation of energy. And so, like many people, I experienced such things. So I wanted to question that view that they can't be real because they seem to be real to me. So that's the context of the question. So this event with the crow happened in Tokyo, Japan, when I was working there as an exchange scientist at the University of Tokyo. And a little bit more context of when it happened that I don't think I mentioned for your book, Paul, is this. So before this event with the crow and me happened at the University of Tokyo, there was a news story on the TV news in Japan, NHK TV, about something causing problems with the Shinkansen, the bullet train, which is, you know, was a big deal in Japan, the very high speed train. There were pebbles being put on the tracks, and it was a mystery. You know, it caused a big problem to have a pebble on the track of the Shinkansen. And so they were trying to find the person who was doing this. You know, maybe it's a kids, pranksters, or what's going on, saboteurs. And finally, a security camera saw that it was a crow putting rocks on the rails. And I thought that was really a fascinating story. And I was thinking, what was this crow doing? You know, crows are known to use tools to break open nuts. Maybe the crow thought, hey, this little rock, if I can break it open, I'll find some new kind of morsel or something. So that had happened weeks or months before the event happened with my experience with the crow. That was watching and into the courtyard outside my office window, a crow alighted, and I had a suddenly experience, a kind of visceral experience of how we can have real connectivity experiences beyond ourselves without violating the laws of physics and modern physics, especially quantum physics. And so that was the basis there. And that background of the crow, why was it putting things on the track, or that was the solution to the mystery of what was going on with the pebbles on the Shinkansen track. That solution to that mystery had to do with some kind of intelligence or creativity doing something behind the scenes that we didn't know about. And that was analogously the solution to this question of how we can have these real connectivity experiences that connect with the physical world through our physical bodies and without violating the laws of conservation of energy. That is, something creative happens there behind the scenes that we don't know about yet in the laws of modern physics.
I appreciate that backstory. Yeah, I hadn't heard that before, Thomas. That helps fill in some of the pieces and really fleshes out too just the message and the intelligence behind that. Stephen, I learned so much reading your book. And one of the things I learned was this distinction you speak about with, say, encountering a coyote, say, with a small C versus the coyote with the large C, which then it transitions into carrying really the wisdom of the entire, say, coyote consciousness universally, not just the animal. And you describe that so beautifully in one of your stories, which was the coyote medicine story. And I really found that moving. And I'm wondering, can you share with us, how does a person perceive that shift from seeing the animal, oh, there's a coyote, and you're having the sense of that particular coyote, and then something happened where your consciousness then, it shifted to the collective consciousness of all coyotes, and that's what you began to experience. Can you share that with us?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's one of my favorite topics, and I'm sort of known for that. You know, I'm the animal spirit guide guy. You know, I got a few publications about this because I think it's really important. It's a way to connect with the larger field of the natural world. And that is that when my 25 words or less guideline is, when an animal shows up in an unusual way, and or repeatedly, there's something pretty big going on. And that is that Great Spirit, God, Source, whatever you want to call that force, has presented to you an opportunity for a message to come through, a message of healing. Like you mentioned, Julie, about your Shih Tzu, and I'm sorry for your loss. That's another story. We just lost a pet about 3 days ago. And having the visitations, that's sometimes how they have. I cannot tell you how many stories I've heard. After grandma passed, you know, and there's a dove that flies up on the table. I'm out here having coffee and the dove shows up, and I just know without knowing that that's a messenger. Right, Julie? That's what happened for you. Yeah. You knew it. You knew it. So 25 words or less, you know, when an animal shows up in an unusual way and or repeatedly, then what I teach and what I encourage people to do is go ahead and start asking questions. Example, now, how do you find out what the message is? That's often the first question. Well, one, you look it up. You know, we have the search engines and such. You could put in, let's say, coyote spirit, elephant spirit. By the way, it's not just the physical animal. It's the symbol of the animal. A lot of times they show up in dreams, in a very vivid dreams, you know, and once you wake up and you go, what was that? And then you start the inquiry. That's one way. Look it up. You know, that's some of my publications. They have suggested messages that might show up, let's say, with elephant or beaver or eagle or any of these beings, these animal beings that are here, the animal people that are here, and that show up in that way to you. And it's really up to you whether it's unusual. You know, like if I see a flock of crows out here, I'm not necessarily going to take that as their messengers. You know, that they have something. But if a crow like hops up and looks right at me, you know, with that one-eyed look, then I'd say that's unusual, and that has happened on occasion. So that's one way. The second way, and this is more, I'd say a little more analytical, which is fine, is think of the characteristics of the actual animal. Like that coyote, that elephant, that beaver, that eagle has embodied a certain life force. And like you said, Paul, it's connected to the larger consciousness, or the consciousness, coyote consciousness is the term you use, elephant consciousness, etc., that there is this web that's connected to all other beings of similarities. That's the spirit animal, or animal spirit guide. And that is the one that was spotted by you and felt unusual, looked unusual, and you kept seeing it or hearing about it or seeing it on a billboard or dreaming about it, however it may show up, that animal. It's not just the animal, it's the spirit animal. And that's a really cool distinction too, is to be able to see it in a different way rather than, huh, well, that was interesting. Did you see that dove just hop on the table? Yeah, that's one way to look at it. So second would be take the characteristics of the animal and you can begin to deduce the possible messages. A good one comes to mind is owl. I've had this great experience from time to time of singing with the owl in the neighborhood. I'll walk out, it's dark. I take my dogs for a walk, usually right about after twilight. And more than one occasion, I'll walk out and there's this, and then I respond. It's a call and response, and we sing to each other. That owl even followed me to the local park one time. We continued to sing. Okay, that's one thing. That was just kind of a cool experience. You know, wow, that was neat. On another perspective, what's the message? So I'm not quite sure how to get the message, so I might look it up and find out that owls, spirit owl, and I make that distinction, lose the A and the, you're talking about the physical animal. If you put it, I don't know what that's called, part of speech, but it's owl or owl spirit. And I would pitch this to you guys, but I'll just give you some ideas about it. Think of the characteristics of owl. They fly in the dark, typically. I've seen them in daytime too, by the way, but they fly in the dark. They're really shadowy figures. I had an owl fly over my head one time and I barely perceived it. You know, I could feel the rush of the wings. And I was with a couple of buddies on a porch and this owl flew over us. And it took a few seconds to realize that was an owl. So often we speak of the spirit animal's medicine. You know, what's their gift to us in that way? And one gift or one medicine of the owl is to see in the darkness. That's one of their strong characteristics. So as a therapist, I don't just do psychotherapy anymore. Like Julie, there's kind of this blend that goes on. But owl was a very significant spirit animal when I was a psychotherapist and I really was introduced to shamanism and spirit animals and power animals. And I would call on owl before every session so that I was able to see into the individual's shadows, you know, those dark parts that get stuffed away, you know, with guilt and shame as we're growing up, you know, we got to bring them out and look at them again. So that's two ways, you know, look it up. Third way, and this is the fun one, direct revelation. You know what this is. Let me explain how I see it as direct revelation. I think it's kind of fun, right? Before you look things up, or I've got some oracle cards that have animal cards, et cetera, and give you a message. And you can go that route or book or the internet again. There's a few different ways. You type in owl spirit guide, et cetera, and you can get some information that way. And often what happens, you'll get maybe three or four, or maybe up to six different possible messages. And what I teach is you, which one really resonates with you? Which one feels right in your body? And trust that that's the message, and then do what you do with it. Do whatever you do with it. So the third way, direct revelation, is you ask the spirit animal, owl, what's your message? Or what I often do is my prayers are thank you prayers. Thank you for your message. You know, what are you bringing me? And then this is where the fun starts. Pay attention as soon as you ask to what you see, what you hear, and what you feel. Real simple. Threes. what you see, what you hear, what you feel. And I don't mean emotions, I mean sensations. And from that, you can extrapolate and find out what resonates. Let's say, for instance, yes, owl medicine, one of the strong medicines, is seeing in the shadows or seeing in the dark. But maybe owl is there to say, listen, you know that thing you're going to do tonight? Stay away. You know, then I found out later there's some sort of semi-catastrophic situation that went on, you know, down at the beach because I was going to go to a concert and it turned out to be about, you know, something like that. And I go, thank you, owl. Thank you for the message. It really has nothing to do directly with the usual medicine or what we might see in a book or on the internet. So I'm a real, that is one basic shamanic principle, is direct revelation. You receive the information from the spirits and from the spirit guides. And after a while, you might see that same animal keeps showing up for you. And you go, what's going on here? Well, that you could call either a totem or a power animal. In other words, it's a long-term relationship. For instance, I'll give you an example. Years ago, we're talking probably 29, 30 years ago, I lose track. I was in a men's event. We did this meditation and a snake came to me. Now, I like the physical snakes. I like them. I had a boa constrictor my daughter gave to me after she moved out to tend to. I didn't know at that time what that was. You know, then it was like a couple of years later, I was called to take a course in shamanism, a few courses actually. And I went, wait a minute, that's a power animal that's come to me, has showed up for me in that way. Some traditions, there's a belief that you are born with a spirit animal. And again, we probably are, but typically we haven't had support for that or teachings for it. Now we do. Now we understand that. Now we understand, as Thomas, as you referred to, you know, there's a kind of energy that comes to you and it comes in a certain package, right? And that certain package is connecting with your energy in this mystical, magical, mysterious way. But it's very, I'm a Capricorn, I'm very practical. It's practical. I really believe this in my heart of hearts based on information I've gathered is, and again, you could say God, Great Spirit, the Force, whatever. They want to get to us. They want us. They're supporting this awakening process, however it shows up. And I so admire Thomas and Paul, you guys are blending, you know, converging science and what ordinarily is the mysticism that goes with metaphysics. We need that too. We want to reach left-brainers and right-brainers. So good. Thank you for doing the work that you're doing. Anyway, that's a fairly lengthy spiel about spirit animals, and I'm open to any questions about it. But basically, that's it. Unusual, repeatedly. Physical world, physically embodied or symbolic, when they come in that way, there's something pretty big going on. So pay attention, gang.
I want to get Thomas in here, but first I want to just kind of clarify something that you said to just kind of put an exclamation on it before we do that, is that you're talking, Stephen, I think really important is that we're receiving this communication with the animals. It's coming to us in myriad ways, real life and in our dreams and in our mind. And that's what I want to bring Thomas in on. But you're also inviting us to call on them for their medicine, like to have that relationship to say,
yes,
you know, I need this. And you have a really nice appendix in the back of the book that gives the readers, you know, an idea of when to call on what animals, you know, if you're feeling this or you need a little of that. So it's this two-way communication, this two-way relationship. You're not just saying, wait around for the animals to present and then go figure that out. You're really inviting all of us to use the animal kingdom in this way, to call on them. Can you say a little bit more about calling on? When would we call on the different totems? Because it might not be my power totem or my spirit animal,
right?
But all of a sudden I'm anxious or depressed or have a big thing coming up, and I might then engage in the essence of an animal.
Absolutely. Good point. Thank you for bringing that up, Julie. Yes. And again, most of my prayers are thank yous. You know, thank you, owl, you know, for helping me see into the shadows. Thank you, dove, for bringing some peacefulness to my life. And then we do our best to embody that, usually with the breath and thankfulness, gratitude, you know, about the gifts that they have in this way, their advice, their counsel, etc. Cougar comes to mind. He's in one of the Oracle decks. And his message in that particular deck is take the leap, you know, go for it, inspires confidence. You know, so if I'm feeling like I'm, like you said, maybe I'm giving a big address, you know, to 300-400 people or something like that. Okay, Cougar, thank you. Cougar spirit, you know, for supporting me and helping me feel confident, relaxed, etc. You know, some sort of prayer like that. And then just go for it. You know, take a few breaths, you know, breathe in that essence, you could say, and make that connection with Cougar spirit, and then go out and give your talk, you know, or your speech. And it could be just like a small group. It could be 10 people. You know, I remember that old survey that said, you know, what are the things you fear the most? And number one was public speaking. Number two was death. I always find that fun, kind of oddly funny. We're more afraid. Most of us are more afraid to get up and talk in front of a group rather than, and would rather die than do that. You know, my wife's like that. She's in the background. Yeah, she doesn't want to do any of that. And thank God, you know, she takes care of my business and takes care of me too, and a few others, all the animals we have here. It is true that you can call on these, and it's true in the back of the book. I borrowed that from another book, Animal Spirit Guides, you know, and put it in the Sentience book on animals because it's useful and it does help. The guidelines, like if you are feeling the need for something like this, if you feel the need for healing, maybe call on Dove. I know Dove seems to be pretty popular here. I keep bringing the Dove up. Call on healing. Who else could you call on? I would call on Eagle Spirit. You know, that's one thing is helps you have the perspective too about what's going on. If you have a favored spirit animal, great, call on that one. The ones that guide you, the like you said, the totems, you know, they can help you out. Or if you're not sure who to call on, ask. You know, ask one of your power animals, your totem animals, you know, who can I call on for this particular situation? So yes, you can do that. They will respond in some way. There was something else I'm trying to think of what else I wanted to add to that. So I'll just leave it at that though. And it comes up, I'll let you know. Oh, I know what it is. Let me just say one word about this reciprocity. What I also teach about when you start engaging spirit animals is to give back to the animal kingdom, you know, in some way, time, energy, money, donations. There's some organizations, Humane Society of the U.S. comes to mind. I think that's essential too, because as you start receiving these gifts, it's a great give back. You know, Robin Wall Kimmerer speaks about it in Braiding Sweetgrass, and she uses that word reciprocity. And I love that term. You know, it has a lot of implications that we give back to our world, but specifically for our topic here, the spirit, the animals of the world, the physical animals, they need our help.
Thank you, Stephen. Paul, do you care? I want to follow up with this Thomas piece that I think is essential here because, thank you, we talked about the animal, the literal animal, my cardinal just coming right up to my door. It was like obvious, right? But Stephen, you also mentioned coming in visions, coming in dreams, coming in meditations. And Thomas, you are the president for the Society of Consciousness Studies. You know all about consciousness, and I can't wait to bring this in. What's happening when we're in a meditation, we get a vision, we're driving down the road and an elephant just comes in my mind, and then I get to process that. What's happening as far as consciousness goes, and what's our understanding of this dynamic way of the universe communicating with us?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I think the insight that the crow spirit gave to me or allowed me to have is related to the way that we can bring into our modern scientific view of the world consciousness. And consciousness is really I look at it as the most important and the biggest unsolved problem in modern science. It's never been brought into our view of scientific view of how the world works, including how people work. And that aspect, that key aspect of how we can really bring in consciousness is, and all the efforts around that, and is the essence of, as I see it, the Society for Consciousness Studies. And well, we have very distinguished membership and very many views on that, so I don't want to speak for all of them, but I see it as the essence of that. And also of essence of CIHS's mission as a university is how to help scientifically bring in consciousness to a central role in our scientific understanding and applications of how the world works. So I think that's really key. And I have another crow story I could tell.
Great.
Later after that, living at my house in Encinitas, I have a umbrella, patio umbrella, outdoor patio umbrella, as do most of my neighbors, and they're kind of close houses. And one day from the second floor, I can see my neighbor's patio umbrella. And one day I noticed that there was a crow on my neighbor's patio umbrella pulling out strips of fabric. You know, the crows are big and strong, but he was able to pull out strips of canvas from my neighbor's umbrella, probably, to go and make nest with. And I thought that was really smart. And I was also kind of laughing at my neighbor, chuckling. And then I looked down at my own umbrella, and the crow had already torn off big pieces. And so that was teaching me a lesson, I think, about relationship with community, and don't laugh at your neighbor's trouble until you take care of your own and be compassionate and that kind of thing. So
nice. Yeah.
Crow has been, I think, a factor in my life many times.
Yeah.
If I may say a comment on that, Thomas, I think that is, I get really excited when I hear stories like that. I think it's so cool that you paid attention. Again, you've had some background that led you to be able to see something in addition to what was physically happening. And if I may tell you the hit I got also on that one, I call it a hit. It's just something, sometimes intuitively something pops up like that when we talk about this. Creativity. Like the crow was creating something, was weaving something together. And when that appears, something like that, it could be again, a suggestion that this is a real creative period for you. So, I know you are creative already, but like it's time for maybe another project or weaving together pieces, that's already there, stuff like that. Does that resonate at all?
Oh, sure. It does.
Okay, I'm just curious about that. Yeah, and I wanted to share that. I don't want to impose, but I like your first piece on it, that what you took it as, being compassionate with your neighbors. Pay attention, pay attention. Anyway, thank you.
I love that. I'll just, before Paul jumps in, I'm sure you have a lot of questions, Paul, but to just kind of wrap this in a bow, our friend Dr. Jude Kuravan always says, we don't have consciousness. We don't have mind and consciousness. We are mind and consciousness.
Yes.
And when we shift our understanding of that we are that, then we could see how we are crow and we are, we are cardinal and we are turtle doves and we are the trees. We are all of it when we understand that we are consciousness. So it really does open us to this intimacy in the world around us. I love that. So thank you for that example too. I love that creativity
thanks.
One. I'm like the mischievous part of the crow. Like they're getting into things and there's something mischievous about them destructing or, being mischievous. So it'd be interesting to see what they did with that little weaving of your umbrellas. It'd be fun to follow them. But Paul, jump in here.
Those crows. Yeah. Well, he was upgrading his building material from sticks. But a nest is going to last for years, I suspect. I do have a question, and it gets back to the basically about the animal wisdom and the spirit consciousness. Now, we all know that when a human being has lived, say, in a city for most of their life, their sensitivity to nature is typically lessened. And as you were describing earlier, Stephen, advocating people get out into nature, sit by a tree, that sort of thing really does open up our senses. It revives things that might have been asleep for that person. And I'm wondering, is the same thing possible with animals? Or are they more resilient? For example, let's say it's a raccoon living in the middle of the city its entire life, or the coyote living in the middle of the city its entire life, versus a coyote who's never even seen a city, has been out in the forest its whole life. Is there a difference in their capacity to, say, channel or carry the coyote spirit or the raccoon spirit? Or are they resistant to this dullness that we can often get from living in the concrete jungle, so to speak?
Not a problem. Not a problem. Raccoons, you bring up specifically, you know, they're so resourceful. Everybody else disappeared, you know, the humans and the rest of the animals, they probably, along with the cockroaches, be the ones that were left. You know, they're just extremely resourceful. So I don't see any real distinction. I do think your comment, like us humans, it really is a matter of intention too, of being alert to that and being aware of that. I think somebody out in Idaho or something that goes and, you know, communicates with tree spirit, for instance, not a whole lot of difference from somebody in New York or Los Angeles going to a favorite tree and communicating with tree spirit, which, by the way, you can do, you know, just like with animals, you know, nature spirits. So I don't think there's any real distinction there. I think there's very likely, I'm guessing here, I don't have any proof of this, but yeah, I think you're right about that. There's a tendency to be consumed, if you will, when you're immersed in an environment like that with other things other than the natural world. But you walk outside of New York, I've been there, you know, you walk outside, they have trees planted, you know, in the concrete every so often. There's Central Park there. There's other parks there, you know, et cetera. You can go, if you live in a house, plant something. If there's not plants there already, go plant something, bring nature, bring flowers and vegetation into the house, you know, put them in potters, you know. And again, start relating to these beings as relatives. You know, they are associated, you know, they are part of us, like you said. I was thinking, I want to direct this to Thomas and Paul, really. Something you were saying, Thomas, I came across a book a few years ago called Biocentrism by Robert Lanza. Have you seen that one or come across that by any chance?
I've heard the concept of biocentrism.
Well, anyway, my understanding of it basically is it reverts this idea that somehow the materiality of the world creates consciousness, or we create consciousness. Basically, his premise was very similar. No, 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 no. Consciousness creates the material world. I think that's a really nice turnaround. He even came up with that name somehow, biocentrism. So I just wanted to comment on that. And back to you, any thoughts on that, what I just said?
Well, I think that's very much related to this revolution that I mentioned that's going on in the foundations of science, which is the effort to bring in consciousness as a fundamental aspect of how the world works. And in our Society for Consciousness Studies, there is often debate on that topic. Does consciousness emerge out of matter, or does matter create consciousness? Does consciousness create matter? And there are strong advocates for both sides, and there's also other views, like maybe both consciousness and matter are primordially fundamental and always part of the universe. But I think as an alternative to the materialist paradigm, you know, the physicalist, materialist paradigm, which we're kind of dominated by in the culture still, that's a good alternative to emphasize it. There is also the view that consciousness creates matter. And also there's other directions to that problem. Like, I was invited to chair just 2 weeks from now a workshop at the Science of Consciousness Conference in Italy, Taormina, Italy. And the workshop I'm going to chair is on this question, but particularly how does quantum wave function collapse have to do with consciousness? It's wonderful that in the workshop, there is going to be Stuart Hameroff, who's the founder of these Science of Consciousness workshops, conferences for the past 25 years, and also his colleague, physics Nobelist Roger Penrose, who's written some wonderful books along the lines of maybe consciousness creates matter, or maybe there's some kind of dynamic interplay fundamentally about proto-consciousness, proto-material, in sort of the quantum potential sense, and Platonic ideals. And I think that Crow gave me that opportunity to be in this place right now.
Yay, Crow.
Yay, Crow. Yeah.
Well, when you go there, just tell them if they think it's that way around, just tell them they're wrong.
Well, I'm curious though, Thomas, you wrote a book and I love the title of this book. So I want to hear the meaning of this title of this book. And I have it in my Amazon cart now, but you wrote the book, The Mechanism Demands a Mysticism.
Yes.
And the exploration of spirit,
great
mind,
title.
And physics. I love that title. Tell us more. What does that mean?
Wonderful, wonderful. That Mechanism Demands a Mysticism is a quote from one of the founders of quantum physics, quantum mechanics, Louis de Broglie, who got the Nobel Prize for discovering the wave nature of matter, the quantum wave nature of matter, which kind of opens up this possibility that maybe consciousness creates matter or somehow is involved in the way matter works fundamentally. And so that was a quote from him. And to me, it meant really this experience from the Crow that we can have mystical experiences, but then the materialist, physicalist worldview says, well, they don't really have any reality. But Louis de Broglie's quote about the mechanism of physics, it demands a mysticism because that's the key to the foundations of quantum physics. Suddenly there's this opening for this whole other aspect of the universe to be operating together with the purely physical aspect.
Mm. Yay.
I love that. Yeah.
Yay.
Yay. Thank you. Thomas, yeah. I appreciate that. And I love, Dr. Farmer, that you're inviting this definition too. I'm with you on that. And Paul, I know we just have maybe 5 minutes left in the show before we need to bring a wrap. And I know you have a few more questions too. So I want to let you jump in here and see what's stirred up here.
Yeah. Well, a few things. Thomas, I'm curious, that book, did you write that before or after the encounter with the Crow in Tokyo?
I was working on it, but really only conceptually at the time. So the encounter with the Crow helped me realize very much more clearly the core of the message in the book.
That's beautiful. I'm wondering, we have the elemental beings such as the gnomes, the undines, etc. Can these beings, take shape as a physical, that we would perceive as a physical animal? And I'm asking because I've read about this in some of the esoteric literature that say that that's the case, or that these elemental consciousnesses can enter into the body of an animal and then just sort of run its behavior for a bit. Do you have any insight into that, Stephen?
It's a really good question. I've not pondered that a great deal. I do. It's along the lines of what we've just been talking about.
Yeah.
As consciousness, for instance, when I've taught workshops on spirit animals and totem and power animals, often what happens is, well, mine's a dragon. How can a dragon be a spirit animal? And I say, of course, because why? Because it's in our collective consciousness. Now, did they actually exist as dragons at some point? I don't know how to prove that. And you know what? It doesn't matter. If dragon spirit comes to you, that's really a reflection or an aspect of the collective consciousness we humans have. You know, how many people have heard of dragons? You know, they're all over the place. You know, Phoenix is another one. What a great symbol. You know, Phoenix rising from the ashes. Who's to say that that can't be a power animal? Of course it can. Or a spirit animal, you know, if you want to kind of bring it back down to that, that it visits you once in a while. So I believe that these various beings that are, that some people work with, gnomes, what about angels? You know, do angels really exist? They do in our consciousness. Absolutely. Why? Because it's all over the place. So that, again, to defer to Thomas here, that energy of the collective consciousness shows up in a particular imaginal form. And by imagination, by the way, gang, out of cleft, it doesn't mean it's, oh, it's just make-believe. No. Imagination is the bridge that gets you there, gets you into this alternate reality. You got to have imagination. How can I see, we just lost a cat, and I was in a workshop, and I happened to do a breath work. You know, I participated, and I saw the cat being accompanied by other deceased pets, you know, into kitty heaven, you know, for lack of a better term. Now, did I make that up? Was there something really happening? I can tell you how it affected me, you know, after sobbing about the loss, you know, for a few minutes, you know, it was like relief, like some message that I needed to hear came through that, you know, let's face it, gang, when we don't have a body, it's a lot easier to move around and transit these various dimensions. Like this one fellow say that this one man, this dear brother of mine that I saw in the workshop, he informed me that his wife had gone to another dimension. Isn't that interesting to way to say that she's passed?
Yeah.
She's gone to another dimension. Has her consciousness just immersed into the field of consciousness? I don't know. Depends on what you want to believe, you know, what your take is on it. So I hope I've answered the question, at least my take on it. Gnomes, yeah, fairies, etc. I'm Irish, largely Irish. And so there's something about fairies. You know, there is something about fairies. Now, is that a projection of the shared consciousness? I think so. Well, I think so. But it doesn't mean it's not real. Another term that comes to mind is the soul's reality. You know, it's a different kind of reality. It's an alternate reality. And that's one way I think of it, is it's the soul's reality. Do I work with angels? Not a lot, but Archangel Michael, man, he's the dude. He comes in one exercise and, you know, really supports the process. Look at, I got chills, you know, just talking about it. Anyway, that's my take.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen. I appreciate it too. And I appreciate that so much of our conversation has gotten us to this foundational universality of consciousness. That is a beautiful place to be in this conversation.
Paul, I agree.
Yeah. So talking about that universality, I want to just close with you, Thomas, because I have one more burning question before we close. And if you could like bring this in 2 minutes or less, because it's a big question, but it's the theme of our show. We've been asking, why do humans have metaphysical, mystical, and transpersonal experiences? And what does that tell us about humanity, our potential, and our future? So I'm just curious from your perspective, why are we having these experiences? And what is it telling us about humanity?
Wow, that's quite a question. So this is my personal view. You know, it's not a physics view. We have them. They just happen, but probably for some kind of purpose, but purpose that's beyond us and beyond our little conscious, our little egos to know. And maybe that's one of the key purposes of them, is to expand our little egos into greater connectivity with what is beyond that, which is really vast and amazing.
Mm. The language of the soul is kind of what Stephen was bringing in, this language of the soul. Thank you both for joining us today. It was a delightful conversation. I wish we had another hour together.
I agree. Indeed. I wish we did.
Thank you so much.
And Julie, thank you for sponsoring this, you know, through your work, not, yes, the radio show, but more for your work. Paul, good to meet you, man. I got to look up your book. And Thomas, same with you, man. I really like what you had to say. I wrote down your names and the book, so I'll add that to my reading library. You know, I've got I bounce between books as it is. You know, there's some I love books. Anyway, thank you all.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Julie.
I want to leave you with the words of Stephen Farmer in his book, Animals. We are in the process of a massive awakening as a human race, one in which we'll fully align with all of life and honor all sentient beings as equal. Every one of us who is helping to reintegrate our connection to the other aspects of the sentient world is contributing in a positive way to our planetary evolution. This is the Main Street Mystic Series with co-host Paul J. Mills. Remember, together we are creating connections for the good of the whole. Until next time, I'm sending you a world of love. Bye for now. If you enjoyed the show, go to your favorite podcast platform. Remember to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Also, please consider supporting The Dr. Julie Show at patreon.com/allthingsconnected. When we each give a little, we all get a little more. You can stay in touch with me at juliekrollemail.com. Thanks for listening.